My name is Robert Vaughn, and I'll be talking with you about an assay we've developed in our lab for determining copy number variation in cotton. So copy number variants, CNVs, they're heritable differences in the copy number for any given gene or sequence or genomic segment. They can influence some fairly important phenotypes, including resistance or tolerance to a number of factors such as chemical stresses, here glyphosate-resistant ryegrass, biotic stresses such as nematode resistance, and abiotic stresses such as aluminum tolerance. And they can influence other traits such as flowering time and plant type. So given that they're heritable and influence a number of fairly important phenotypes, these are attractive targets for trait discovery, line creation, and selective breeding, particularly, of course, marker-assisted selection. However, the sequence similarity between them makes detection somewhat difficult. There are some methods that do work for CNV determination. I won't go through all of them, but FISH and next-gen sequencing, qPCR, people are probably familiar with those. And they work, but there are one or more limitations, such as requiring specialized expertise or equipment, time, not being readily scalable, and most importantly for most labs, cost. So the goal we set out with was to design a PCR-based platform for assessing CNV that had the ability to target a specific sequence of interest and assess the relative copy number of that sequence compared back to a control or normal organism. It would be able to use mid-quality DNA, minimal equipment, ideally equipment we already had in the lab. It would be relatively low cost and would be adaptable to other organisms and ideally scalable for large selection projects. So rather than redesigning the wheel, what we did was to repurpose and redesign an existing SNP genotyping assay, CASP, that we've used successfully in the lab to target two loci as opposed to one. And then, of course, we had to develop the procedures to test and verify this method. A little bit of an overview of CASP for people who aren't familiar. You start with your genomic DNA, and then your CASP master mix. The CASP master mix contains two different oligos that are labeled with two different fluorochromes, FAM and HEX, and then also a background ROX dye for normalization. Then the PCR, you supply your own primers. There are three primers for this. You have two forward that are the same, with the two exceptions that they correspond to one or the other SNP you're interested in, and they're also labeled with an oligo that corresponds to the oligo or the fluorescence labeled oligo in your master mix. So when these amplify, that sequence becomes part of your product, and then the oligos in your master mix become incorporated into that, which causes them to be dequenched. So then they fluoresce and you can read that. So this is graphic demonstration of that. You start with basically no fluorescence, you amplify, and then you end up with three options really, either fluorescing with just FAM, just the HEX, or both. And this is very useful for determining SNP. The problem with it for our purposes here is that it really can't tell the difference between one or more copies of any given gene. It can just tell you the difference between zero and greater than zero. So CLA assay it starts similar. You use genomic DNA and then the same CASP master mix. A key difference is that instead of having two primers that target the same loci, you have two primer pairs that target different loci, the one you're interested in, and then a separate control or reference. And that can be on a different chromosome, or it could be on the same chromosome, as long as it is not overlapping with your test loci or locus. And then you amplify as you would with the other. This is just kind of a summary of that. CASP is targeting one loci, CLA is two. The master mix is identical. Primer pairs, you use three, so two forward and one common reverse for CASP. For CLA, it's two unique pairs. The cost is comparable. The cost per base pair for designing your primers, and then roughly 15 cents per well for your reagents. So to test this, we have a TM1, which we're calling a standard gossypium hirsutum line. It is disomic at every chromosome. And then from this same population, we've derived a number of aneuploid lines that we have in our germplasm collection. So they have the same background, and they are disomic at every chromosome with the exception of one. Either they are missing an entire chromosome or a part. So H designates that they're missing an entire chromosome. TE or telo means that they're missing a portion of a chromosome. So for example, TM1 would have 26 pairs of chromosomes. H4 would have 25 pairs of chromosomes, and then one single chromosome 4. So if you were to compare any loci on chromosome 4, the TM1 would have twice the dosage. And this is kind of a graphic illustration of that. You determine the FAM to hex ratio for your standard, and you would set that to 1. And then you compare your samples that you're trying to determine copy number on back to that. If they have a normal copy number, they will also cluster around 1. And if they have half, then you would expect it to have about a 0.5-to-1 ratio. And for this, it's looking at locus 1 and locus 2. Locus 1 is the test, 2 is the reference. In many cases, it would be a good idea to test against multiple references just to be certain. So 1 and 2, 1 and 3, 1 and 4, and so on. So we have some sequence data that we have derived from CHIP assay. Based on this, design primers using Batch Primer 3, although any primer software would probably work. And then these primers were independently tested to assure that they do amplify, but that they do not amplify one another. We extracted DNA using the Macri-Nagel kit, assured that it was of reasonable quality. And then the most important factor we found through trial and error is that they're diluted to a uniform concentration. I won't go into too much detail here. The assay, the reaction conditions are the same as for the CASP assay, with the exception of the final amplification cycles, where we interrupt it and scan, and then add further cycles and scan, and keep doing this until an optimum number of cycles has been reached. Analysis was performed using the Ferristar scanner, although any FRET scanner of reasonable sensitivity should work. Software was with the accompanying Ferristar software, and then the cluster caller, which is provided by LGC, the same company that provides CASP. And this is formerly provided by K Biosciences. Some of the results, this is H11, which is, as I referenced earlier, missing an entire copy of chromosome 11. So it's disomic at every chromosome except for chromosome 11. These are five individuals that have been done in triplicate. And as you can see, they all cluster around roughly half the normalized expression ratio of the TM1, which is over here in the corner. So this is TM1, that's the standard, set at 1. And then these are the ones we tested. And these were tested on a loci chromosome 11 against another loci on chromosome 20. Here we have 4 H20s, so missing a single copy of chromosome 20, otherwise normal, done in duplicate. And this was a primer pair comparing a loci on chromosome 20 to one on chromosome 10. Again, it clusters around half. This is H10, same thing, missing a copy of chromosome 10. They cluster around half as well. And this is targeting a locus on chromosome 10 and comparing it to a locus on chromosome 16. Two unique individuals in triplicate. These are the same individuals and is targeting a different locus on chromosome 10 and comparing against the locus on chromosome 20. So this is what I was talking about earlier with multiple reference points. They all seem to agree, so that gives further confidence in the conclusion that this is in fact an aneuploid. So the results, the CLA assay performed as we expected and hoped. I was able to confirm aneuploid status in 10 of our existing lines, as well as some of the progeny produced by selfing those lines. And it seems to be useful for identifying dosage differences in homozygous populations. In the future, we will work on designing further primers to cover the genomic regions that remain and verify the rest of our germplasm, and also test against suspected but not verified aneuploids and non-Gossypium species. Okay, so in summary, this is a relatively simple and inexpensive method for determining CNV in cotton. We are calling it the CLA assay. This should be widely applicable across different organisms and for different purposes. For our purposes, we are identifying and verifying aneuploids for introgression, but it should be useful for other studies as well. In plant breeding, I would expect it to be primarily useful for discovery and creation of CNVs, and then using that information for selective breeding, either directly by measuring CNVs in the progeny or by using this to identify SNPs that are associated with those CNVs. So in my last few seconds, I'd like to thank the Soil and Crop Sciences Department, Texas A&M AgriLife Research, Cotton Incorporated and NSF for providing funding, Dr. Fei Wang for her support in the Agrigenomics Laboratory, and Drs. Wang and Holst Kemp for their help with the sequence data. That's all. Thank you.
We've got a couple minutes for questions.
Yeah, so that's a good question. The question was, is there an upper limit on copy number variants? Right now we're looking at 2-to-1 because that's very straightforward and simple. For if it were, let's say, 3-to-4, could we differentiate? That's going to be part of the next round of testing. So I couldn't answer you that right now. But given that there is such a large separation, you know, 0.5-to-1, I think once we, you know, fully optimize the protocol, I would expect that, yes, we could be able to differentiate 3 from 4. But I haven't tested that, so I can't say for certain. So the question was, have we tested GM crops? Is that what you're asking?
You have a utility on the CLA testing. I think the mix is, if you can differentiate from 3 copies or 2 copies or 5 copies to a single copies of the transgenic event. Mm-hmm. For example, you need a study and you've got several copies, and can you detect those?
Oh, okay, yeah. So we don't have any transgenic crops in our germplasm, but I don't see any reason why it wouldn't, as long as you have a suitable reference. If you can target specifically the gene that you are inserting and you have a suitable reference gene somewhere else in the genome, I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be able to differentiate those. It shouldn't matter whether it's a native or alien DNA. But we have not tried that, no.
All right. Thank you very much.